each one this morning. I invite you to turn to Jeremiah 18. Be looking at the first six verses here. The context is Jeremiah is going to the potter's house. God told him to go there, and he said, once you get there, I will tell you more. The sentiments found here in this here passage are mirrored in Romans 9, verses 20 through 21, but we won't get there this morning, but that's another passage we could look at. Jeremiah 18, verse 1. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, arise, and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause you to hear my words. Then I went down to the potter's house, and there he was, making something at the wheel. And the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again into another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter, says the Lord? Look, as the clay is in the potter's hands, so are you in my hands, O house of Israel. I want to key in on verse 4. And in particular, the phrase there, the vessel was marred in the hand of the potter. We're not told what caused the vessel to be marred. We're not told what the intended outcome was of that vessel. It could have been a defect in the clay. It could have been something that the potter's hand slipped, and it wasn't what he envisioned. But as a master potter, he goes and reworks it into another vessel, something that he saw fit. Now, we didn't read verses 7 through 10, but if we combine that with this, with verse 4 here, it's almost hinted at that a person's choices can influence what type of vessel they become, or at the very least, the choices they make determine the outcome that arises. And also what is explicit in this is God's sovereign right to work judgment or to show mercy on marred vessels. I want to take us into a first-person narrative of what it might look like to be clay that's fashioned into a vessel that may or may not meet our expectations. And it begins a long time ago. I was a lump of clay, and this isn't the first-person narrative, so it's not, it's from the lump of clay's perspective. My story begins as a lump of clay, a handful of dirt, a pile of dust there in the riverbank a long time ago. Nothing ever happened to me. But there I was, a handful of dirt, a pile of dust, but I was not your ordinary lump of clay. You see, I had a dream. I was a lump with a dream. I had this vision that someday, somehow, people would say, ooh, and ah, and beautiful about me. But I was just a lump of clay, a handful of dirt, a pile of dust, and nothing happened. Years went by, centuries went by, and there I was, just a lump of clay. But one day, a strange-looking man with a strange-looking hat, with a strange sack over his shoulder, came walking down the riverbank. As he walked down the riverbank, he would stop and he would pick at lumps of clay that he saw that caught his interest. He would take a bit, he would roll it in his hands, he would taste it, and if it was something he could use, he would pull out a shovel out of his backpack and he would dig that lump of clay out and he would put it in his backpack. For this strange-looking man was actually a potter and he was looking for clay to work with. Now, if I would have had lips, I would have said, pick me, pick me. I want to be worked on. Because remember, I was not your ordinary lump of clay. I had a dream and a vision that someday, somehow, somewhere, people would say, ooh, and ah, and beautiful about me. Well, he gets closer and closer, and he comes down to where I was. He kneels right down beside me. He picks a piece off of me, rolls it in his hands, tastes it, and then he takes his shovel out of his backpack, and he selects me. He picked me. Out of all those lumps of clay on the riverbank, I was chosen. He put me in his backpack and he takes me back to his pottery shop. And then he puts me in a dark, damp, dirty closet. I didn't want to be in a dark, damp, dirty closet. There was other lumps of clay there as well. You would have thought that brought me comfort, but before long I found myself wishing I was back there on that riverbank. At least it was warm, at least the sun shone and it was bright. But there I was in that dark, damp, dirty closet. I didn't want to be just a lump. I wanted it to be that someday people would say ooh and ah and beautiful over me. Days went by, months and years went by as well, and there I sat in that dark, damp, dirty closet. But one day, the door opens, the potter reaches in, and he selects me. He picked me off the floor of that dark, damp, dirty closet, and he set me on that pottery wheel. And I began to think, now's my chance. Maybe he will make me into a beautiful vase or a graceful urn, and then someday they will set me on that pedestal, and people will exclaim, ooh, ah, isn't that beautiful? And they'll be talking about me. Well, the wheel started to go around and around and around, and I could feel his hands. They were putting pressure on me. They were shaping me into something, and I was eager to find out what it was. When it stopped, I looked at what he had made. I looked at what he had made me into. He was the master potter, and surely he had a plan. As I looked, I realized he had made me into a common, ordinary pot. Now, no one ever says, ooh, ah, and beautiful over a common, ordinary pot. And then he set me on a shelf. Months went by, years went by. I just sat there, collecting dust. And once again, I realized I would rather have been back on the riverbank. At least back on the riverbank, I had that dream that someday people would say, ooh, and ah, and beautiful about me. But the master potter had made me into a pot, and there I sat. One day, a little urchin boy came in. Another day, a prince came in. There was a lot of traffic in and out of that shop. And one day when that prince came in, he was looking to buy something. And again, if I'd have had lips, I would have said, pick me, pick me. Because at least he would have taken me to his castle. And maybe there I would have had a chance to be set on a shelf or on a pedestal somewhere, and people would exclaim over how beautiful I was. But he didn't pick me. Another day, the little urchin boy came in. He was looking for something cheap. I didn't want to go with him. Who knows what he would have done to me? And if I had had lips, I'd have said, don't pick me. Please, don't pick me. But he picked me. As a matter of fact, the potter simply took me off the shelf and gave me to him. Gave me away, no value at all. Just gave me to that little urchin boy. That little urchin boy took me back to his tent, and he put me on the floor of the tent, and he filled me with raisins. I hate raisins. I would rather be back on the riverbank. I would rather be back in that dark, damp, dirty closet as a lump of clay than to be a pot filled with raisins. Because truly, no one says, ooh, ah, isn't that beautiful, over a pot full of raisins. Now, sometimes they would pick me up, they would empty me out, which was good, but they put more raisins in, which wasn't good. Days went by, weeks and months went by, and there I was, on the floor of the tent, raisins in, raisins out, and I was just a pot. But one day, a general came into the tent, a real important man. He almost kicked me over as he walked in because he wasn't watching where he was going. But I heard the general, and there was going to be a battle. And I thought, this is the general. He is really important. And if I would have had lips, I would have said, pick me, pick me. But as I listened to the general talking, I realized that he's doing some really strange things. You see, he had an army of 32,000 men, a big army. But as time went on, he was sending people home. He'd send this group home and that group home and tell these they could leave until he ended up with 300 men. Now, if I'd had lips, I would have said, don't pick me, don't pick me. He's going to get whipped. But the general was looking for a pot, and there I sat on the floor of the tent, full of raisins. He picked me up. He dumped out the raisins, which was good, which I appreciated. But then he started talking about lamps and trumpets and swords. And in place of raisins, he put in a sooty, old, dirty-smelling lamp. It was terrible. He took me out into the night along with his 300 men. I heard the sound of trumpets. I heard men shouting. I heard pots breaking. I was broken. And the general went off into the night, and he left me there. And now I'm just a cracked clay pot. And with that brokenness went the last of my dreams of anyone, anywhere, saying, ooh, and ah, and beautiful about me. I didn't want to be a pot, but the master potter had made me into a pot. I didn't want to be broken, but the general had broken me. And so there I lay, on the riverbank, a broken pot. Days went by, weeks and years went by, decades and centuries went by, and there I lay, in the sun. But one day, a strange-looking man with a strange-looking hat, with a strange sack on his shoulder, comes walking down the riverbank. And as he's walking along, every now and then he would stoop down and he would pick up something. He would examine it with his little magnifying glass. And as he examined it, he would say, ooh, ah, this is nice, but it's not what I'm looking for. He keeps coming down the riverbank. And all of a sudden, he sees my broken pieces. And he picked one up. And he said, ooh, ah, beautiful. This is what I'm looking for. And he began to pick up all those broken pieces, even the tiny ones. He puts them all in his backpack. He goes back to his restoration shop. And there he starts putting the pieces back together. He was very meticulous, and he took his time. Every piece in its right place, and everything back together, just like the original pot. Just like the original pot, except for the brokenness of where the cracks were. And when he was finished, he brought it out, and he set it on a pedestal. He set it there very carefully. And soon, people come walking by, and they read the sign that the restorer had put on that pedestal. The sign reads, Gideon's Pot. And when they saw the sign, people said, ooh, ah, beautiful, over the pot, but not because of the grace and beauty that's found in the pot, but simply because the pot had been molded by the master potter. It had been broken by the general. It had been put together again by the master restorer, the one who puts things back together. And those cracks, they serve as a reminder of the brokenness. And they serve not to bring glory to the pot, but rather, any glory that could be found in the restored pot is due to the one who touched it. Now, I don't know how this fictional story of Gideon's pot strikes you, but I know what it does for me. It restores something deep on a soul level, and it gives me courage. Because recently while I was hunting, I experienced a time with God where It was a time of grief and yet deep worship, a time of surrender. And the Holy Spirit's presence there made it into, while it was deeply bitter, something that was also deeply sustaining and comforting of his presence as he continues to mold my piece of clay. It's undeniable that life shapes us, or rather we could say God shapes us through life and circumstances. And sometimes those shaping moments, they happen and we don't realize it, you know, sibling interactions or things like that. And yet there are other times when we acutely feel God's fingers at work, pressing, shaping, molding, taking a little bit off here, maybe applying something there. And when we look at what God's doing, when we look at what he's fashioning, we can ask the question, well, this isn't what I want. God, why? Why are you doing it this way? Why not the other way? This is not what I want. Do you even know what you're doing? And it's at those times when I'm tempted to believe the health and the lies of the health and wealth gospel. And it appeals to my carnal nature, because if I could just do more, if I had just do the right things, if I tried harder, if I had more faith, I could get what I want. I could be that vessel that I want to be. And in doing so, we often forget two things. First, we allow the pain of our unfulfilled desires to obscure the reality of God's sovereignty that we saw in Jeremiah 18:6. And secondly, it's not about what I am, but rather it's about who I am. It's about the heart position, and we see that later on in Jeremiah 18. This morning, I want to call us back to that comforting presence of God, who is the master potter. And the reality that while he shapes us through things we can't explain, through things that are often painful, he's there in the process. Not only is he on the outside shaping it, but he's with us in the process of shaping. Maybe you feel like you're hidden away in a dark, damp, dirty closet. No one sees you. Or you're an ordinary clay pot on the shelf. You're formed into something that you don't want to be. Or you feel like you spend your days holding raisins. I don't know where you are. I don't know how you're feeling, but I know where I want to be. And that is, I want to be in God's will. And oftentimes, yes, that I would want to idealize that as a beautiful vase somewhere set up somewhere. And yet, as much as I dislike raisins, if it's God's will that I'm a common, ordinary pot holding raisins, that's where I want to be. And I want you also to be in God's will, no matter where that is.